The following program is recorded content created by the Truth Network.
Wake up, everyone. It's time for the Steve Noble Show, where biblical Christianity meets the everyday issues of life in your home, at work, and even in politics. Steve is an ordinary man who believes in an extraordinary God, and on his show, there's plenty of grace and lots of truth, but no sacred cows. Call Steve now at 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Or check him out online at thestevenobleshow.com. And now, here's your host, Steve Noble.
Oh, fresh back from Facebook jail. Then, of course, we run into a technical issue, but we'll be back on Facebook any second now. But nothing to see here, ladies and gentlemen. Nothing to see here. Move along. You can trust every election, every county, every list, every mail-in voting ballot, every vote that's collected with ballot harvesting. You can trust it all. You don't need to worry about anything. Quit freaking out. Last year was just an aberration. There's really nothing to see here. And so I don't even know why we're talking about election integrity, because I think the system is perfectly fine just the way it is. Welcome, Hal Weatherman. How you doing, bro?
I'm living the dream.
Yeah, living the dream.
Yeah, here with Steve Noble, the man, the myth, the legend.
How much worse could it be? Electoral Education Foundation is an organization that Hal just recently started. Hal's got a long and storied career in politics. For those of you that have been a part of the show for a while, you know Hal because of his buddy Dan Forrest, and before that, Dan Forrest's mom, Sue Myrick, who served in Congress for, was it 18 years, Hal?
18 years.
So how long have you been in politics?
Right at 30 years.
And now you're with a young buck, Madison Cawthorn.
Now I'm the old man in the
Now you're
stable.
The old man. You're the old sage man. Guy in the office out there in Western North Carolina. How's that going?
It's going great. Madison's a warrior. You know, he stands up for truth and has a big crosshair on his back,
yes,
you know,
for sure.
Because he speaks truth in a dark world. But I support him, and it's, you know, I consider it, when he hired me, more of a mentor.
Yeah,
relationship.
Sure.
He's young, I'm older. And he basically said, you know, during your time here, pour 30 years of your experience into me, which I thought was a very wise move for a young man to make. And
great
so, so that's kind of what we're doing. And then he gave me free guidance when he hired me. I told him I still need to reconcile my past. I worked for Dan Forrest, you know, for all those years as his chief of staff and ran all his campaigns, his good ones, and unfortunately the one we lost. And I just told Madison that, you know, as I move forward, I still have to reconcile my past, and I want to do something for the next guy.
Yeah.
And so out came this nonprofit that we just started and that I'd like to talk about.
I don't think I haven't seen it. I've been pretty politically active since about 2004. I have not seen as much attention placed on election integrity in my entire life, which that I guess that's a good thing that came about as a result of last November's election. But have you ever seen this be as much of a hot button issue? And how bad is it on a scale from 1 to 10?
No, I've never seen it this bad in terms of there's clearly a lack of trust in the system itself. And some of that, you know, maybe came from this last election, but some of it came before. You know, the majority of the people in the state voted for photo ID. And then the courts overruled it. So there's a lot of inherent distrust now in the system of why are these decisions being made against the will of the people. And then, you know, fast forward into the last election, and then there's all kinds of, you know, whether you're on one side or the other, the issue, it's just come to the forefront. And so what we're trying to do, though, is something very, very simple in concept, but very profound in implication. We just want to focus here in North Carolina, and we want to target the North Carolina voter file itself. And a lot of people don't realize, but the voter file was where all registered voters reside, right? That's where their information is stored. There's about 7.9 million registered voters. And you're in there. I'm in there.
Yeah.
I'm in my 50s. So I'm registered once, but I'm probably in there 10 times.
Right, for all the times you've voted.
For all the times I voted. And every time I vote, and you as well, you generate about 67 new lines of code. So think of the size of that file, 7.9 million times maybe an average of 500 lines of code.
Jeez.
And you're looking at a proverbial haystack. And if you're in an election where perhaps you're underwater at the end of the election and you want to contest it or you want to challenge certain things, you've got to go find, let's just say, you know, 10,000 needles out of a file that's 7.9 million times 500 lines of code. And therein lies the inherent problem. So what we want to do is focus on the file itself and monitor all updates to the file that the State Board of Election does on a regular increment.
So when we look at the frustration starting last November and everybody, all this anecdotal evidence, some of it looked actual, some of it looked like it was based on, pathology and different studies, and everybody's screaming, look, there's so many things, yet nothing could go anywhere in a court of law. So was it that we're looking and we missed the forest for the trees? Or what's the problem with the way we approach election integrity right now? Because everybody wants to look backwards, like we're going to change last November. Hey, everybody. Anybody home? Nothing's going to change from last year. So forget that. We need to be forward-looking, not backwards-looking.
I think most people don't understand the election process itself. They understand the act of voting, but they don't realize that the election's on November 3rd, right? Well, really, it's not, because you have 3 weeks of early voting. And really, it's not, right, because you have absentee balloting that goes back to September 1. The election doesn't end on November 3rd. It ends 10 business days later when what's called the canvass takes place in all 100 counties. And so if you want to challenge an election, or you want to challenge any component of the election, you don't challenge it in aggregate statewide. You have to drill it all the way down to the county level. You have to lawyer up, deploy those lawyers into those 100 counties when the canvass is taking place.
Jeez.
And if you miss that window, right, then there is no court of jurisdiction to hear you out. You must catch it in real time. So you're absolutely right in terms of forward thinking. I wish in the election that I was in this last time, on election night or during early voting, that I had a tool like what our nonprofit is going to put forward, where in real time we can make sure that the movements that we see in the election file meet the state law. And if they're not, then we can use that as evidence to challenge during that 10-day period. What you're looking at now is no process in place, and then the 10-day period runs out, and people are wringing their hands, and some people feel it was legitimate, some people think it's not, but there is no court of jurisdiction. Election law is the purview of the state. We have 50 states. So when you're talking about a national election, then where do you go, right? Where do you go? And therein lies the problem. So we're not going to solve everything. I'm not attempting to. I'm just one person, and we've got a really good, dedicated, small team of people. But we're going to archive every update that the North Carolina Board of Elections does. And then the next time they update it, we archive that, and so on and so on. We're going to hook all those archive files up to a supercomputer, if you will, a SQL server, run algorithms through it and isolate the movements that have the highest correlation to fraud, and then publish our findings. Hmm. And all we're really trying to do, we're really not looking for fraud. We're looking for movement with a correlation to fraud and publishing it.
Because where there's smoke, there's usually fire.
Well, think about a white-collar prosecutor. If I'm a white-collar, maybe we'll save this for the next thing.
Yeah.
But what we're really doing is taking white-collar prosecutor tactics into the election file itself.
Mm.
And I'll elaborate on that.
Yeah, and we got to do something, because it's obviously a problem. Is it more of a problem on the right or the left? I think most of us know that. But how do you move forward? And how many of you are struggling right now to even trust the next election? Will that keep you home? That's part of the problem as well. We're talking to Hal Weatherman, Electoral Education Foundation. We'll be right back. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show. Back from Facebook jail, which affected my life almost nothing. Zero, zip, nada. It was a little frustrating at first, and then I'm like... And then, you know what was interesting about it, is you realize how much that's muscle memory now for somebody like me when I'm looking, and I jump on Facebook and I'm looking, and immediately I want to post, right? Then I try. Then several times over the weekend, I post something, and they're like, the access denied. Okay, so that was probably good for me, but we're back. So if you want to actually be in the studio, and while you're listening to commercial breaks on the radio, which we appreciate and we love all our radio partners, we're actually having additional conversation here in the studio. So if you are only radio, for you, the show is about 41 minutes long. But if you're on Facebook Live or YouTube Live, then for you, the show is about an hour long. Now, for some of you, you're going, Steve, I'm perfectly fine with 41 minutes of you. I don't need 60. But the smart ones are going, give me 60. Well, the only way you're getting that is if you're in the studio via Facebook Live or YouTube Live. Okay, so we're here with Hal Weatherman, who's got 30 years of experience. 30? Is it 30 or more?
No.
We don't need to say that.
It's just right below 30.
A few decades.
It's a few decades.
A few decades.
Federal and
state. Experience, federal and state.
Yeah.
And in many ways, would you say that you've spent your political career as kind of the man behind the scenes?
Yeah. I mean, I was Congresswoman Sue Mark's chief of staff for the majority of her time in Congress, and then ran all of her campaigns, and then transferred over to her son, Dan Forrest, did the exact same thing, was his chief of staff on the government side, and then would leave to run the campaign. So, it you know, it's part campaign management, it's part government service, kind of an ebb and flow, depending on the two-year or four-year cycle. But it's a unique set of experience. And it's one of the things that I've, you know, again, to kind of reconcile the past, you know, I feel very uniquely qualified to bring into the election integrity thing, because campaign managers were just a different breed.
Yeah.
And there's, in terms of statewide, I've run five statewide campaigns. You know, we live in the weeds.
Yeah.
And if you understand day in and day out the minutiae of a campaign, you realize what I'm saying. But there's only a handful of us out there. And so, you know, we have a unique perspective of election integrity because we live in it.
Yeah. You're
and
in
our
the
careers
weeds.
Are hanging in the balance because of it.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I felt like while I was still engaged in the process, let's do something good for the next guy. You know, let's do something and create this tool that all sides could use. We're nonpartisan. I don't care. I want to restore trust in the in the voting system by holding the system itself accountable. And that's never really been done. And so to me, the voter file is the foundation of all of it. And before the break, we were talking a little bit, you know, just think about it, because sometimes it gets hard to understand. Think about it. Pretend like I'm a white-collar prosecutor, and I've been tasked with cracking down on money laundering. And let's just say there's a million corporations in America. Well, I don't have the time. I don't have the money. I don't have the legal standing to go after a million of these corporations, because most of them aren't doing anything wrong. But what I am going to do is probably sit down at a database and do a query search and isolate and pull out of that million corporation list all the ones that have maybe a small LLC with a five-man board of directors that have attached to it a sister LLC with the same five board of directors. And maybe they even have a brother LLC. Now, there's nothing illegal about that, but if the same people are on all three boards,
but it's odd.
That structure is needed. You talk to any white-collar prosecutor, they'll say, listen, it's not illegal, but that structure is needed if you are to move money from A to B C with it being unclear.
Got it.
We want to do the same thing in the North Carolina voter file. We're not really going through the voter file. We're comparing yesterday's file to today's file, and we're isolating not the file but the movements between.
Got it.
And then we're going to run algorithms through it, so by attaching it to a supercomputer, so we can go through the entire database in real time and isolate the movements with the highest correlation to fraud. And, you know, to me, it's not even going to be the things that you think about. It's going to be, and I'll give an example.
I was going to ask about that. We're talking to Hal Weatherman, Electoral Education Foundation. ElectoralEducationFoundation.com is the website. Okay, this is up and it's live now. And so we need to support this because the vast majority of you, if not 90% of you, are concerned about election integrity. We complain about it. We throw stuff at the TV. We listen to other people complain about it. But when you actually have a chance to encourage somebody and support somebody that's doing something about it, that's when you move from knowledge to responsibility. You know about it. Now you have an opportunity to do something about it. So I would suggest that we all do that. So if you go to electoraleducationfoundation.com, you can be a part of that and donate and help support it, because if we can't trust our electoral system, we're going to have an increasing number of people that don't bother to vote. And then you live in an oligarchy. I think for the most part, we might live in one right now. But voting election integrity is everything. If we lose this, there is no United States of America anymore. And a very small group of people are controlling everything. On a scale from 1 to 10, Hal, how bad is this in North Carolina? And just because we're at it, how bad is it nationally?
Well, I'm going to be more qualified on the North Carolina front. I have my suspicions nationwide, because I think some of the same things are happening in other states that are happening here. I'll give you one concrete example of what took place in this last election, and I know it took place because it's been published in others as well. So, as you know, we have mail-in balloting in the state of North Carolina. Whether you like that or not, I'm not a huge fan, but regardless, it exists. But we know, and this is not Hal Weatherman's theory, this was documented, REL put it out, News and Observer put it out, so this was already published, that there were George Soros-funded organizations, for instance, that were sending out pre-populated absentee ballot request forms upwards of 1.8 million statewide.
Pre-populated.
Right? Pre-populated. Now, state law is clear. State law, General Assembly passed a very common sense measure that said, if you are in possession, County Board of Elections, if you are in possession of a pre-populated absentee ballot request form, you are to throw it away. Mm. Right? Yet, the director of the State Board of Elections during that time period sent out a memo to all 100 counties saying, if you are in possession, reminder that state law says to throw it away, so do so. Then mail them a non-pre-populated absentee ballot. Understand that the genesis of that 1.8 million people was targeted by a group that had a partisan affiliation.
Sure.
So the second a government entity then says, look, we see what you were attempting to do, so we'll just complete the process for you, is problematic.
Yes.
That's one example. That's one example of the type of activities that in this last election that I saw firsthand, and it was very troublesome, but it's one of many. And we were talking about this earlier, you know, when we were on break or whatever. We're not trying to – if you talk about voter fraud, what are you talking about? It's not a monolith.
Right.
Are you talking about
one thing.
Are you talking about same-day voter registration? Are you talking about provisional balloting? Are you talking about ballot box stuffing? Are you talking about ballot harvesting, voter impersonation? I could go on and on. And so to investigate any one form of fraud takes amazing time,
yeah.
amazing resources, and amazing expertise to know what you're looking
for. Well,
you
said that earlier. I mean, we watched that all last fall. You can lawyer up all you want, but there's so many smoke signals coming up.
Correct.
That you can't chase them all down.
Well, and it's like a finger in a dam. The
right.
second I pinpoint one and put my finger in the dam, then expect other holes to open up. So we're going to reverse the election integrity process. Instead of looking for fraud, think about this. This is a simple, true statement. All fraud requires movement in the data file. Mm. That's a true statement. So rather than looking for fraud, look for the movement. It's the same thing that a white-collar prosecutor is doing when he isolates and says, I'm going to look for structures that fraud needs to exist. And so this is going to upset some people that are big in the election integrity movement. I'm actually not looking for fraud. What we're trying to do is establish basically a forensic accounting firm that's going to analyze voting files and say these movements that we see have a high correlation to fraud for someone who wants to exploit
right.
it for
like
fraud.
Right, just like you said, with
clean it up.
Another crime, you've got this
Correct.
Organization that's got a sister LLC and another sister LLC, and they all have the same five board members. And that's one of those things when you rub your chin and you go, huh, that's interesting, because that has to exist in order for illegal activity to exist. If
exactly.
it doesn't exist, you don't need to worry about it. But if it does, so now this is a matter of let's be a predator drone and look for these areas that are causing or could be problematic and focus there instead of everywhere. I want to talk about Maricopa County and what happened out in Arizona, because I think there's a lot to learn. We'll be right back. All right, let me start with a quick question. Do you think your vote counted last November? Your vote, did it count? Was it counted correctly? Did you get any weird information in the mail? Did anybody ever show up and they told you, well, you voted already? Stuff like that. So there's all kinds of issues out there with voter integrity. But the question is not that it's happening. Of course it's happening. I think it definitely happens far more in the blue area than it does in the red area. But the question is, can you trust it at all? And is it going to affect whether you go vote next year? Next November, we got a huge election. You could switch the Senate. You could switch the House. In North Carolina politics, it's a big deal. And if we don't have voter election integrity, then I fear that a lot of people are just going to say, ah, forget it. It's rigged anyway. And then people stop voting, and it only gets worse, right? Then it only gets worse, Hal Weatherman. So Hal's been involved with politics for nearly three decades and in Congress and also on a state level. Sue Myrick was in Congress for 18 years. Her son, Dan Forrest, of course, our great lieutenant governor, and Hal has served and helped alongside and in the weeds down there in the election process. And now has started Electoral Education Foundation. That's electoraleducationfoundation.com. I've got the links up on Facebook Live. So you can check that out for yourself. But really, this is, and you said this is nonpartisan, and because what your goal here is to get actual information out so that everybody can see it. Because we need transparency, don't we?
Exactly. I don't think a lot of people realize that. So when the North Carolina Board of Elections updates a file for Steve Noble, let's say Steve Noble.
I moved.
You move.
I moved last October, as a matter of fact.
Okay. So the file that existed, right, that had your old address is superseded now by another file, and that previous file goes away. Now, the state board will say they maintain a record of all the updates, but it's in another database. Right now, the State Board of Elections master database is public record. I can go look at it anytime I want. I can run queries on it. I can attach it to a supercomputer. I can run everything through it, but not the movements. To me, that in and of itself is a movement with a high correlation of fraud. I'm not saying they're committing fraud, but I'm
yeah.
saying the second you take something off the books and deny me the ability to look at it.
Right.
Right?
It's a bit of an issue.
Right. And think of all the different movements. It's not just that you moved, that you registered, that you got a year older or anything like that. It's not that. It's that you applied for a ballot. It's that that it was the request was received, that it was mailed to you, that it was then correspondingly voted on within a deadline. All these movements need to be monitored in real time and published in real time so that we know you voted when you said you voted or that you were denied the ability to vote because they didn't mail it to you.
Yeah.
And so that's part of the process, just adding transparency to the whole process. I actually think, you know, I think people are going to be amazed. I mean, we're working on a project now, don't really want to talk about it, but we're probably going to release our first set of findings within a week. Mm. Where we're going through some updates, recent updates that the state board has done, and we're just using common sense and pinging file against file.
Yeah.
And we're just going to publish a finding. We'll let people draw their own conclusions.
Yeah. So, you know, but at least the information's there.
It will be there, but you know, people need to sign up, right? If they don't sign up, you won't see it, because I don't think the media is going to give us a whole lot of fair coverage.
No, of course not.
You know, even though we are nonpartisan, bipartisan.
Yeah, really up to us.
And by the way, I could care less which party. I'm a Republican. I openly admit that. People know my background.
Sure, of course.
We need to restore sanctity, sovereignty, whatever the word you want to use, back into the voting system.
Oh, absolutely.
And so I could care less. We'll track down fraud wherever we find it, period.
Here's an interesting question for you. A buddy of mine on Facebook Live just said, a friend of mine in Idaho told me of a mother whose son lives in North Carolina, here and had voted twice in North Carolina elections, said it was easy. Okay, so anecdotal, but let me ask you a straight question.
I could tell you hundreds of anecdotes. When you run a statewide campaign, I could tell you hundreds of anecdotal
stories. Let me ask you this question. If you were going to throw a statewide election in North Carolina, how would you do it?
Oh, mail-in balloting would be the first place I go.
But explain that. How would you do it?
I'm not going to go into great detail on that right now, but we don't purge our files. We purge our files after elections. We purge our files.
And by then it's too late.
After the election.
Oops.
Right. And remember, when you purge a file, the only reason to be removed from a voter file is that you moved, you're dead, you failed to vote in two consecutive elections, or the Board of Elections can't verify you are who you are or you live where you say you live. And so we routinely purge after, about 6 weeks after an election. And I've never understood that. Why don't we bump that system forward
right. And
purge the file of ineligible voters prior to an election? Because what that means is there's a huge repository of people that may not be eligible to vote.
That's a pond
ready of eligible people for someone to come out and vote in their name. Am I saying that's happening?
Right.
No, I'll let, you know, time will tell if that's happening or not, right? But I think that the more that we can put a spotlight on that process, right? And force the policymakers to make common sense changes in state law to tighten up those requirements. It's only common sense. Then that'll be a benefit for the voting public, and it'll restore trust in it. So, I mean, that would be an example of right off the bat, you know. But mail-in balloting is problematic for a multitude of reasons, and I hope that our nonprofit will spell some of that out, and I think you'll see some of that here in the near future.
And there's a term that gets thrown around a lot in the last year, ballot harvesting. Mm-hmm. I don't think most people understand how that works.
Well, yeah, and again, you know, reactions have counter reactions, and so there is ballot harvesting, more so in other states than North Carolina.
What is it, though?
Well, it's when a person is chasing down an absentee ballot request form. An absentee ballot request form is sent in. An absentee ballot, therefore, is being sent to the person's house, and a person tries to intercept that ballot, usually with an elderly person, someone who might think they need assistance.
Yeah.
They go knock on their door and say,
let me help you with that.
Let me help you with that. A lot of times they pose as a government official. They're with the Board of Elections. I'm here to help you. But at that point, they've got they can assist the person, fill it out. They can put it in an envelope, not seal it. They can come back. They can change it and do whatever they want with it at that point. It's an issue. It is an issue in North Carolina. It is more of an issue in other states where it's actually legal. And so that's very problematic. So that's just one form, right? But, you know, the General Assembly came out this last time because there was an instance of ballot harvesting in a previous election. And they started messing with the witness requirements, started tightening up the witness requirements to fight against that, which I understand that. But then you saw that come full circle in this last election because of COVID. Then you saw one side come in and waive the witness requirements.
Right, of course. They just
started
changing.
Right. And so when you see both sides arguing over the same minutiae, just from different vantage points, it tells you there's some strategic advantage from that minutiae.
Yeah, absolutely.
And let's monitor the minutiae.
Right, yeah.
Right, and let's put that out.
What about voter ID? How much would that help here in North Carolina? And do you think we're actually going to get that done? Obviously, they passed it already, But
I mean, the majority of North Carolinians want it. I think the courts are being partisan in their opposition to it. Voter ID exists in other states. It works fine.
Yep.
It passes constitutional muster. There's nothing unconstitutional about North Carolinians passing a constitutional amendment, exercising the right.
Imagine that.
But with that said, I'm optimistic that at some point in the future we will get it. Will it solve voter ID? A vast majority of it. It's the gatekeeper, right?
Yeah,
literally is the gatekeeper. You need an ID. I mean, think about this, Steve. You need an ID to buy beer, to buy cigarettes, to buy a car, to rent a car, to get Medicare,
to get into the
Social
airport.
Security, Medicaid, to fly on a plane, to do anything.
All of it.
To do absolutely where are the protesters?
Right. Nowhere.
Where are the protesters on that? And I just
because getting on a plane doesn't change the results of an election. That's why.
Right. I just, you know, it's a great disservice. It really would establish trust with the voting public again.
How much power does the North Carolina State Legislature have over this situation?
They have a tremendous amount of power that is then weighed against the power of the courts.
Jeez.
Right. And so obviously the General Assembly passes North Carolina election law. It's their purview. But in the hyper-partisan environment we're in, virtually everything they've done, many of which I agree with, has been litigated in front of an equally partisan of the other side court system. And so, you know, this is what we have. But, you know, with voter ID in particular, I think that was an affront to every registered voter in the state of North Carolina.
Yeah.
You know, an unelected judge, not accountable, superseded the will of 58% of all North Carolinians.
That's right.
Who exercised their right to vote. And so I just, you know, it's hard to believe, but that's the environment we're in today.
Yeah. That's why I don't have a problem using the word oligarchy when you've got a government run by a very small group of people. And especially when it comes to the judicial branch and what's happened there, it's really remarkable. How do we get involved? How do we help?
Go to our website, electoraleducationfoundation.com. We're on all social media platforms as well. And sign up because we want to push out our findings. Like I said, we're going to be transparent. We're going to be open. If you want our findings, you're going to get them. And we'll do updates on a regular basis. Do it now. You'll see that what we're going to do right now is basically off-election year performance audit. We're going to go through and audit certain activities that we can go back in time and look at and say, this is a loophole and needs to be fixed. As we move into the traditional election season, and by that I mean 2022 congressional races and then 2024, then you actually start to see the frequency of our reports coming out, sometimes daily, monitoring real-time election decisions that are being made. And I think a lot of them will be eye-opening to a lot of people.
And then we can share that information, we can push that information, and we can hold our elected officials accountable. And by the way, for all of you that name the name of Christ, you can be praying about this as well, because truth is a big deal. Hal Weatherman, ElectoralEducationFoundation.com. Thanks for coming in, buddy.
Thanks, brother.
We'll be right back. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show. Great to be back with you. Great to be back on Facebook Live. Thanks, Mark. Appreciate it, bro. Appreciate the help. So, you know, I think it was the James O'Keefe video I put up. That was a whistleblower kind of video, and that was just a bridge too far for our friends at Facebook. But it's good to be back on. So if you want to join us here in the studio, just go to the Steve Noble Show page on Facebook. You can also do that on YouTube. And, you know, about every other day on YouTube, we get kicked off, and on Facebook, not that often, surprisingly. So I'm happy about that, but it's good to be back with you. Dow Jones down 250 points today as of right now. Bitcoin and things like that, if you're paying attention, is always an interesting ride. There's a lot going on out there. And then did you see this story? Merck, a pharmaceutical company, Merck, just came out and asked for emergency authorization. They actually have a new COVID pill that they're trying to get out. So a lot of things that are going to affect the markets and affect what we do with the money that God has put us in charge of, which is why every Monday we get a chance to talk to our good friend David Fisher from Landmark Capital, landmarkgold.com. And praise the Lord, David, again, staring death in the face. And the Lord just says, yeah, not yet, David. I still got stuff for you to do. So we praise the Lord for how you're doing and how you're feeling. It's so good to hear you sounding better and stronger every time. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing so much better this week. Just got a little bit of cough. Marianne's completely had a full recovery, so we're
Praising the Lord for
just all the miraculous things he's doing. And thank you for everybody and their prayers for our family.
Amen. You're very welcome, of course, and a pleasure to labor alongside as you guys go through what you went through. So we praise the Lord for that. Well, on Money Monday updates, everybody, and if you're like, hey, why do you do a financial thing once a week? Well, because the Bible talks a lot about money and possessions, both Old and New Testament. So if it's in there often and regularly, we're going to cover it regularly here on the show. But when we do a Money Monday update, like last week we did a full show when David shared his whole testimony on their recent brush with COVID. But on the updates, we always start with a passage of Scripture. This is a great one today, a great reminder for all of us. Hebrews 11:1. I think everybody's going to recognize this one, David. So let's start there.
One of my favorites. Now, faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. You know, I found out that faith doesn't make things necessarily easier, but it makes it possible.
Yeah.
In fact, it can turn the impossible into possible. You know, and we think about the negative, you know, like Reggie Jackson, the famous baseball player, struck out 2,600 times, the most in any baseball career history, yet he was known for his home runs. And Thomas Edison failed 1,000 experiments, but on 1,001 experiment, he created a light bulb. So I've learned that the adversity in that there is also not just a lesson, but a blessing also.
Yeah. Yeah,
so we must wait for both and have faith and the patience to learn what the lesson and the blessing is. So,
amen. Yeah, such a great reminder for all of us, whether it's going through something with our health, a loved one's health, finances, your family, your kids, your marriage, your business, whatever the case may be. It's such a great reminder. Okay, so Merck getting into the COVID game, and they came out. I just saw the story. I was reading about this earlier today, this new COVID pill coming out from Merck. So tell us about that, because I have a buddy, Bill, on Facebook Live was like, hey, the Merck pill cost them $17 to produce, but I'm pretty sure they're going to charge hundreds of dollars. And he also mentioned that part of the development there was paid for with grant money. So is this just another company getting in on the cash cow that's COVID in terms of medicine, or what's happening here and why does it matter?
Yeah, molnupiravir is the name of the drug. Your friend was really close, $17.74 it cost Merck to produce the pill, and they're selling to the government for $712, and the government funded the research on this with $29 million to Merck.
Ironically, Hold on.
Yeah, I know.
Hold on.
Away, isn't it?
Yeah, before I throw up here on the air. So $17.74 to produce it. They got, in part of the production process and the development process, they got $29 million in grants from the government. And how much did you say each pill is going to cost?
Well, the total of 40 pills, which is 5 days twice a day, is 712 days. So a dosage is 712 days, and it costs only $17.74 to produce those dosage.
Yeah, that's a good business to be in.
Bigger.
Yeah, 40 times bigger. Oh, geez. So what's that going to do financially? Does it matter to us in terms of investments and savings and what's happening with the market?
Well, if you want to buy Merck, their stock went up 10% a week ago Friday when they announced this. They're thought to make $7 billion by the year end because they already signed a contract, a $1.2 billion contract with the government to supply 1.7 million courses of medication at $712. So, excuse me, why am I sharing this? Because this confirms what we talked about last week. It's all about big money with pharmaceuticals.
Yeah.
And I could go on and on. Excuse me. Remdesivir is the same boat. Remdesivir costs $9.32, yet the insurance companies are being charged $3,120.
Yeah.
They're going to make $750 million this year and $1.1 billion next year.
Yeah.
And the ironic thing about this pill, too, by the way, is now the pushback is coming because what it does is it changes the structure, the cell structure of COVID. And so when it mutates, it can't survive. That's all good in a petri dish, but now scientists are saying what it's doing to the body, it could cause cancer and birth defects. So be careful on taking this pill is my advice.
Yeah, yeah. And so that's why we have to be aware of all this and don't be I mean, it's good to be skeptical. It's good to be a critical thinker. There's a lot of money being made here, and you can't say that doesn't matter because it always does. So, unfortunately, we live in this broken, fallen world. There's plenty of corruption. Nobody is pure as the wind-driven snow except Jesus Christ himself. So we should all have a healthy dose of skepticism, and that's why we need prayer for wisdom and discernment, and boy, do we need critical thinking. So what's going on recently with the market and economic news in general, David?
So one reason why we talk about this also is health and wealth go hand in hand. So I want to talk a little bit about our wealth and also our health. But China's news came out that leaked the Communist Chinese Party documents that there could be another COVID-19 breakout on a large scale. So Epoch Times found that data. Here's some money things. Bank of England is talking about tightening easy monetary policy. Also, Bank of Japan has stopped money printing, and they're stopped selling or buying government bonds, and they're starting to sell it. We're seeing a former central banker from the Bank of England in 2008. He said last week that the U.S. economy is already in a recession. We're seeing slow growth, relatively high unemployment, rising prices, which he's calling stagflation. And Goldman Sachs is saying we're moving into stagflation, and they slashed 2021 and all next year economic forecasts significantly, that the economy is slowing and consumer spending is slowing. A couple of big things happening this week. One big one, the key event is the CPI print and the consumer price index, because last week jobs report came out very disappointed. We thought they were going to add 720,000 jobs. We only added 235,000 jobs. So there's this all this talk on Wall Street about inflation now. Look at oil, look at price of food. We have inflation. It is here. And now they're concerned about what the CPI number is going to come out this Wednesday. So we're going to look for that.
Yeah, such a fascinating thing. And now it's interesting. Mainstream media is now starting to embrace the fact that inflation is real and it's not transitory and it's going to be here for a while. And I think we're all starting to see that. I mean, and I just heard the story over the weekend about natural gas has gone up like 116% in the last 9 months under the Biden administration because they shut down all of the ways that people could get that and trying to expand the pipelines. These are very serious problems. And a lot of people in this country use natural gas, and a lot of people that don't have a lot of money, and all of a sudden their heating bill is going to double this Christmas time. I mean, it's just brutal. What about the debt ceiling?
So the can got kicked down the road here. Senate vote 50-48 last week till December 3rd. Mitch McConnell wrote a big hate letter to President Biden saying, "We're not helping you anymore." Basically, he says, "I want to inform you, we're not going to provide any more assistance on raising the debt ceiling." So come December 3rd, somewhere around that date, Congress is going to have to get it together, both the House and the Senate, and raise the debt ceiling. And either that or do a standalone bill or, you know, put it on the next year's spending of a spending package for 2022. Yeah. So we just kick the can and ignore the problem.
And knowing that the infrastructure bill isn't going to cost zero, which I don't know why they're still holding on to that, which is so ridiculous. How do they? You gave out a phone number last week, David. What's the concern with the way they want to fund the infrastructure bill that would necessitate us calling a phone number up in D.C.?
Pretty much anybody hearing my voice is going to be affected by this. They want to go into your bank account and see if you're moving more than $600 a year, and if so, they can hit you up for tax evasion. You have to prove you're innocent, and The bill is beefing up the IRS to do these. It used to be $10,000, so it's going down to $600. The other one is anybody hearing my voice who has an IRA, your IRA possibly could be affected by pushing you out of into a cell for a distribution to generate a whole bunch of revenue to the government to pay for this. So this is why, you know, you diversify into gold. Gold, there's a report saying it could go to $5,500 by Jefferies Long-Term Holdings. So call my company, learn about that.
And what's the? How do they get a hold of you?
You can call 844-604-2575, 844-604-2575, or go to landmarkgold.com. If you want to learn where to get ivermectin, you can call me for that too also.
Awesome. David, thank you so much. As always, we appreciate you, and we'll continue to pray for your full recovery. Praise God for that. And we'll talk to you next week. Okay, buddy?
Sounds good, my brother.
All right, man. We'll talk to you soon. Thanks so much. Bill, I'll find out after the show's over. I'll ask that question that you put on Facebook Live. This is Steve Noble on The Steve Noble Show. God willing, I'll talk to you again real soon. And like my dad always used to say, ever forward.
Another program powered by the Truth Network.